A new documentary is airing tonight on Wisconsin Public Television, and it highlights groundbreaking work going on in our state. The documentary follows new research on the Yahara watershed and how the lakes have changed since agriculture became prevalent in the area.
But the Yahara 2070 project goes further than that. It also lays out scenarios about the future of the waterway and how people will use it. And those projections can help to shape our priorities and behavior over the next several decades.
You can't understand the biology and ecology of a lake without understanding the priorities and values and activities of the human beings around the lake.
It's the voice of Steve Carpenter, one of the researchers featured in the documentary, and he joins us now. Steve Carpenter is the director of the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison, as well as a professor of zoology. Steve, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
This Yahara 2070 project, it seems like a really ambitious long-term thinking project. And I think of a lot of times when we're thinking of long-term and environmental stewardship, that's a few years, 5 or 10 years. Why take this really long view?
Well, we thought that most people cared about their grandchildren and probably knew their grandparents. And so it's a time scale humans think about. And it's also the time scale that's relevant to some of the changes we wanted to study. For example, to really understand climate change, you need to be looking out decades. And to really understand the changes in our soils and our waters, you need to take a long view. These things actually unfold over decades, not years.
And reading about the project and looking at the documentary, it seems like it's really easy to think in the future we're going to be kind of like we are today, maybe a little different, more of the same. But when you look back at the past of this watershed, it doesn't work that way. There have been dramatic changes in some periods.
Absolutely. There have been enormous changes. And, of course, if you read about the history of Madison or look at old photos of Madison, where old might be the 1960s or 1970s, you realize that in just a few decades, our region has changed tremendously. And that's true of the whole state, the whole country.
And a big part of the environment, when I think of limnology, I think you're out there collecting samples in the lake, and it's the science side of that. And that's a part of the project. But it seems like a big emphasis on here is what we do, what we people do, how we live, what we eat, how we behave, and what our values are. How important is that?
That's incredibly important, and it's historically it's been excluded from ecology and limnology. But of course, people are here to stay, and what we do changes our environment, and our environment changes us. And so, it's impossible to think about change without thinking about people and the natural world interacting.
Before we look at how we're trying to project or imagine the future, let's look back at the past, get our feet wet with some examples. Talk about something like agriculture's development in this watershed and how phosphorus has ended up being such an important factor in what lakes look like.
Sure. Agriculture began here in the 1840s when the first settlers came. We know that by 1870, as much land was plowed as would ever be plowed. And we see that in the sediments of the lakes. When we take a core from the lakes, we see black sediment on top. Those are the recent ones. And around 1870, the core turns gray, and those gray or whitish sediments are the ancestral ones, the ones that existed before those rich prairie soils came into the lake. After World War II, agriculture began to become much more mechanized, and commercial fertilizers were used more widely. Dairy herd sizes gradually began to increase. Of course, they've reached very large size today. And we began to develop phosphorus problems with our lakes. Phosphorus is an essential nutrient, but too much of it degrades water quality and leads to the sorts of toxic algae that we are beset with today.
This project focuses on the Yahara watershed. This issue you're talking about does not. This is something that people all over Wisconsin are talking about.
This is something that's occurring all over the world, actually. And the summer of 2016 was really the summer summer of algae blooms. We had huge blooms in Lake Okeechobee. We had unprecedented blooms in the ocean on the East Coast, and blooms that have never happened before. Of course, there was the famous Lake Erie case here in Wisconsin. Lake Pepin had very severe blooms, and lots of other lakes in the agricultural regions of Wisconsin are suffering from these toxic algae.
Let's complete the circle here. Now, this is coming from, in large part, agricultural runoff, human behavior in general. What do we lose when we get these kind of blooms? What's the impact on us?
Well, for one thing, you can't drink the water. So municipalities that rely on the water for drinking have to go to bottled water or pay a lot of money to purify it. It also impacts recreation. It impacts real estate along the lakes. The lakes are a big part of Wisconsin's tourism industry. And we know that the algae blooms cost us literally hundreds of millions of dollars due to the damage they cause.
We're talking to Steve Carpenter with the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison. Looking at this project he's part of called Yahara 2070, taking a long view on one particular watershed in south-central Wisconsin. Let's start looking out into the future now. This is a very ambitious project, and it started in a way with focus groups. It sounds like talking to people in the area to talk about what the future could, would, should be, or could be feared to be.
Well, that's right. People create the future, and we wanted to know what people's expectations of the future were. What did they fear? What did they hope for? And we gathered this information in focus groups and in interviews and in surveys, and then we put it together. And of course, every person has a story, and we couldn't tell them all, but we condensed it into four different stories about the future that were really built around the ideas that people had. So, for example, one of the stories asked, what happens if we really amplify technological development in our region? We're already really good at biotech. We're really good at high tech with some companies that are world leaders in those areas. What if we added green tech and really amplified our investment in education and development of those technology sectors? And we used the green tech to fix our own environment. So we sort of became the experimental guinea pig for our own technological development.
That's one of the scenarios. Another is we do nothing, almost a worst case scenario. Can you talk about that one a little?
Well, that's right. We felt that we needed to have a repeller scenario in the stories. And actually, we had a lot of people who thought, well, the environment's not that big a deal. We'll figure something out. Let's not do anything. We also had people we interviewed who thought, you know, getting the population lower would be a really good idea. So in the disaster scenario, we get the population lower, and there is an airborne toxin that evolves in the deadly bacteria of the Madison Lakes and kills a lot of people, drives a lot of other people out. And so we play out the consequences of that large human exodus in that story.
So as you say, there were four scenarios in all, and at that point, if you stop there, it's just like, oh, this is kind of science fiction. But it looks like you take these scenarios and try to science it out a lot and talk about, if this happens, what would that mean? And really down, what would it mean for water absorption by the ground, phosphorus, things like that?
Absolutely. There are many things we can compute about the future if we make some assumptions about human behavior. And the stories essentially give us the assumptions about human behavior. We can then translate those into computer models. And for things that can be calculated, such as water quality, flood frequency, carbon storage in the soil, food production, we can actually calculate what would be generated.
And you're still working on these models, as I understand it, but you found unintended consequences sometimes. One I saw in the documentary, I think, was about corn. taking away corn from the watershed, what impact would that have on phosphorus? It's not as obvious as it might look.
It's not as obvious as you might think. Normally, we think of corn as a highly polluting plant because the ground is bare 9 months of the year, so the soil is just running off into the lake. So, you know, so normally you think that converting land to corn is going to be harmful to water quality and to groundwater. But it's also important to remember that corn is really, really good at taking up phosphorus. And it's way better than a lot of other plants at taking up phosphorus. So as climate change lets us run a longer growing season for corn, we might actually be able to use corn along with cover crops to remove phosphorus from the soil. And this was an angle we had not expected at all.
So you've got these focus groups, Noah, you've built these scenarios, you're putting them to scientific modeling. So what? What do we do with all this when you come out with this information?
Well, I think that we will be able to point to some things for individuals and for policymakers to consider in the future that they haven't thought of. For example, our flood simulations showed planners in Madison and Dane County some consequences of flooding that they had not anticipated. And we pointed out how climate change could easily make floods far worse than anything we had seen so far. And they began to take up that information and incorporate it in their planning. We also are generating a lot of ideas about how to manage phosphorus on the landscape.
This, again, it's an ambitious project, pretty amazing. Has anybody done anything like this elsewhere before that you know of?
I'm not aware of any regional project that has the degree of modeling that we have. There have been, of course, surveys of people and focus groups on environmental things. But what we did is we brought together the human side with the computing side in a way that I believe is unprecedented for regional studies.
Are people around the country kind of watching, taking notes, and thinking we should do something like this here?
We are getting a tremendous amount of inquiry, actually, from all around the world. And I and other investigators have been invited to speak at a number of conferences. And I think it's generating quite a bit of excitement, yes.
Steve, thanks a lot, and good luck with the project going forward.
Well, Rob, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed chatting with you about it.
That was Steve Carpenter, the director of the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison. His work is featured in the new Wisconsin Public Television documentary, Yahara Watershed, A Place of Change. That's airing tonight at 7:30. You can also catch it on Milwaukee Public Television on Friday, October 14th at 6 p.m. on Channel 36.